Welcome to Talking Success, the podcast series that focuses on everything fintech. I'm your host, Alan Franks, and each week I'll be joined by a series of experts in the field who have a wealth of knowledge to share. It's time to meet this week's guest, so grab a coffee and let's start talking success.
Good morning, good afternoon, for whatever time you're tuning in. I'm Darren Franks, and this is another episode of Talking Success. If you're watching on YouTube, you may notice something a little bit different. In fact, that I'm not wearing a hoodie or a t-shirt today. I'm actually in a collared shirt. And that's because I've got a VVIP on today. I'm joined by Mr. Mark Elliott, President of Sub-Saharan Africa at MasterCard. And I thought, well, I better dress up. I better put a shirt on because this is kind of the more corporate side of fintech. And then I turn my camera on and Mark's like in a jersey, as they call it out here in South Africa. We call them jumpers back in the UK. But anyway, we're here with Mark. We did record this a couple of weeks ago and Mark wasn't feeling too well. So we thought we would re-record and show Mark at his finest. So there's no excuses now, Mark, I'm afraid. You're kind of on the spot. So we'll start with an intro. I've been really looking forward to having Mark on. He's got a fascinating background and obviously covers a slightly wider area than what we've typically covered here on Talking Success, which has either been sort of country specific in Kenya or in South Africa or in Nigeria. But Mark's role really is broad, a lot broader than that. So I'm hoping to get a bit more insight into what's happening across the continent. But before I go on, Mark, welcome. I'm glad you're feeling better. Quick intro would be great.
Thanks, Darren, and thanks for wearing a shirt. I love avoiding wearing shirts and ties and everything else that we've worn for most of our lives. It's great to be with you here and talk about payments, a big topic, very topical. Every time we open any type of social media or startup or fintechs, payments always seems to be part of the conversation. So it's a great topic and great to be talking about Africa.
Amazing. Good stuff. Well, let's start with something topical, if we can. So we're on the 25th of July. A couple of days ago, I read an article which was MasterCard's collaboration with PayU here in South Africa on a new product, a click to pay. Can you talk about that? I think that's a really good place to start. And then we can delve a bit deeper into sort of your background and what MasterCard are doing here in South Africa, but broadly across the continent.
Yeah, so I mean, we obviously when we come up with we look at the local market and we can figure out obviously that e-commerce is growing significantly in South Africa. I think the data point we have is that it grew at 25% last year. And then against that data point, we have to think about so what are the use cases that are coming through. So that we can grow the different players who need to participate in e-commerce. And I guess what's obvious is that SMEs can benefit from various new ways of making and accepting payments. And equally, us as customers can also benefit in that e-commerce environment. So Click to Pay is a new solution, as you say. But in a place like South Africa, the way to think about how you scale something is to be working with payment service providers who really manage a lot of the smaller merchants at scale. And so if we want to really have impact with that significant merchant base that sits in South Africa, we want to work with the likes of PayU. So that deal is taking that solution and leveraging that relationship with PayU to get it out to all of those merchants so we can get that use case going.
Mark, what is the solution, kind of high-level terms, without going to sort of too much techie stuff, but what's the high-level solution, A, from a consumer perspective, but also from a merchant?
Yeah, so I mean, as a consumer coming onto the merchant's webpage, if we want to make a payment, and say from your mobile phone, then it would recognize you, and you'd be able to, through your credentials, you'd be able to be recognized and to click to pay. And so that's the experience. It's a more seamless secure experience based on the fact that you've signed up to be part of Click to Pay?
I experienced something similar. I imagine something similar in the UK a few months ago, where I was buying a ticket for the London Eye or whatever it was, and you go onto the app and you sort of select the time or whatever your ticket, and then it literally gives you options. Say, click here to pay, and it was a double tap on my phone because it was connected to Apple Pay, and boof, tickets. I mean, it was so seamless. It took microseconds in terms of the transaction, but from a customer perspective, being able to go on and have that experience, it was just easy, right? I mean, there was no sort of OTPs or there was none of this. But obviously here in South Africa, where we have got things like 3D Secure, does that complicate things a little bit in terms of the regulation around sort of payments and how payment is initiated and how payment's done? Is it quite difficult to navigate in terms of the regulatory side when you're innovating?
So, I mean, I think the other thing, just before we leave the experience, is obviously what we're trying to do is we're trying to work with merchants to improve their approval rates. And that opportunity to drive those approval rates up through what you're referring to, things like 3D Secure and other authentication measures that we've got in place during that payment experience. And so in that payment experience, what we're leveraging is the tokenization technology, which will then allow us to, allow the merchant to effectively increase their conversion rates. And so I guess that's what Click to Pay is. That's the latest initiative that we've got, which offers that increased security and peace of mind back to the consumer, so that we build that use case and ultimately scale. So in terms of what you just mentioned, it's kind of part and parcel of the way that we imagine those experiences being lived. We'll navigate that 3D secure authentication protocol that's in place through it.
Okay. Great. And then if we look outside of South Africa and we start to talk about the broader continent that you're obviously responsible for, what innovations are you seeing there? Are you seeing other markets slightly more innovative because the regulators are slightly more amenable to new solutions coming in place, or the opposite? Are you finding actually it's quite difficult, quite challenging to put in new payment methods, A, because of adoption, but B, because of sort of regulatory hurdles that you might need to overcome?
Look, I think the regulator are generally very open to innovation and keen to see innovation foster. They recognize that, globally, there are these big tech firms who are mobilizing, and they haven't all come to Africa quite yet, but eventually they will. And therefore, having a digital roadmap locally makes sense to have that in place now. We do need to spend a bit of time capacity building the policymakers, so that they they enable the ecosystem to kind of be supportive of innovation. And there are times, obviously, when we need to educate. I can tell you, I won't tell you which regulator, but at some point, I was sitting there explaining how a contactless transaction happens, and explaining how cool this thing was, and how some countries like Australia are 98% contactless, and this particular country was zero. We need to go through that capacity building in order for innovation then to flow. In terms of other innovations, which I think are exciting on the continent, alongside Click to Pay, I think another one which is very relevant is Pay by Link. So where the SME can extend a link for an invoice to be paid. I feel as though this is a really strong use case for our types of markets. We've launched that both in East and West Africa, as well as Southern Africa. And I think that will take off. The other thing which I think is really interesting is just lower costs of acceptance generally. And so most recently, we've worked with regulators around things like QR in Kenya. And there's now that support from the regulator around QR and that being EMV co-compliant, meaning it's interoperable. And behind that, the opportunity obviously to, create the economics at an ecosystem level so that they are ultimately attractive to the merchant to want to display that point of acceptance to build out the rails for card. And that's important because card actually brings a lot of benefits, as you know. I mean, it's a tried and proven transaction type, which has got all the security, etc. And so that's QR, but then there's also tap on phone. Tap on phone, obviously, where we enable phones to accept a transaction, a contactless transaction. I would say that's also another very exciting development on the acceptance side, where we can also build out the card rails. And so QR, tap on phone, click to pay, pay by link. I would say these are kind of the hot ones at the moment. And then what I see as well is I see certain fintechs taking that to the next stage. And if we can find ways of reducing the cost of cash and making people's lives simpler in everyday use categories such as transit, I think that's super interesting and very innovative. So broadly speaking, a lot happening on the acceptance side.
So I'm going to go off piste a little bit here. I hope you don't mind, right? But I saw something on another social media platform the other day, and it caught my eye. And I'm just going to read it out to you, okay? And then I'm going to read you some of the comments. And it said here, "Good day. I see more and more shops, and not just the small shops, are refusing or not accepting cash, but only accept card payments. Is this allowed as cash is still legal tender? I understand that because of the high crime rate in our country that this is safer, but is it legal for a shop not to accept cash?" Now, that's a fair question. And I don't think we're going to go into the legalities around, you know, whether a shop can dictate, you know, what sort of methods people use to pay. But I think what threw me a little bit was actually the responses. Okay. Obviously, not mentioning any names, I'm not going to post this. But it's things here saying, simple, we don't support them. Go somewhere else. Cash is still king. Followed by, go and get a group of people going to the shop and fill the trolleys to the brim, all bringing cash. If they refuse, they will have a lot of repacking to do. And so, right? And it carried on. And there was a lot of comments, very, very similar, saying that, you know, this is put in by the state because of control. This is Big Brother watching. So I'm not going to get into detail around whether that's right or wrong. You know, we have our own views, and that this isn't the forum for that. But from a consumer education perspective in emerging markets, do you feel that there's quite a bit of work still to be done? And if there is, how is MasterCard going about? Obviously, the branding's everywhere, and no one doesn't know who MasterCard is. But how are you sort of creating an understanding of the benefits behind e-commerce, digital payments, etc., and moving away from this sort of cash economy? Is there a strategy behind that? Do you see that being something over time? There was a lot of questions there, Mark, but maybe you can unpack it.
So in terms of the cash economy, I mean, I think the reality is that there is a degree of what we call secular shift, as certain parts of society and the economy move from, you know, cash to electronic. And so it depends on which country you're talking about, but I probably see about 6% secular shift year on year. Okay. Over and above that, then there are definitely cash pools where there is a propensity to move those cash pools to electronic. But ultimately we have to solve a problem statement in order for adoption to follow. And I've got lots and lots of examples of where I've done a great job of that. And I've got some examples of where I've done a really poor job of that, right? and that's because sometimes you think you've got the solution, you've got the product, you've got the solution, you roll it out, but the consumer experience doesn't necessarily follow, right? And so, you know, I genuinely believe that we have to continue to try and seed new ways of giving people the way to make a payment, and then we'll see whether it's there. Now, most recently, where we had the in Nigeria, we had the demonetization right at the beginning of this year. They called in all the notes and they changed the denomination. Now, what happened at that point was, we anticipated that everybody would move to what's called the transfer services, which is run by NIBS, which is the person to person. But the capacity wasn't really there. And so there was some failure in the system. And I think that's widely acknowledged by everybody, that ultimately they weren't ready for those type of volumes. So what did customers do? They were looking for experiences so that it actually worked. Lo and behold, contactless all of a sudden became interesting to the consumer on the street, because it was a digital transaction. The money was, they still had the money, it's just it wasn't in cash, it was sitting in the bank account. And contactless was recognized as, wow, actually, this is a good UX. Maybe we all need to, as an industry, get behind this UX, because customers are maybe enjoying this a little bit more than we anticipated. And so this is critical, right? We have to continue to do that. QR, to be fair, has worked in some countries and has underperformed in others, right? We've done a great job of it in South Africa, where you can go to a market and you find people are displaying the QR. Yeah. Equally, in some places, despite the inclusion nature of QR, the merchant is not bringing out the QR and displaying it. Now, that could be a number of reasons. And sometimes we have to fix the economics. So it's about the UX, but it's also about the economics to the merchant. And I think what we have to do is we have to recognize that if we're going to make these, to your point, after the secular shift, if we're going to do these at scale type of shifts in terms of cash behavior, then we have to be open to the idea of almost disrupting ourselves and disrupting the way we've shown up for the last 20 years, because we're now dealing with very different segments to what we were used to before. And we intend on going into new sectors, such as healthcare and these other areas. And so if we're really going to be able to reduce the cost of cash from about 2.5% of GDP in some countries, then we're going to need to kind of think very differently about all these different aspects.
And I think there's perhaps a slight lack of awareness about the cost of cash. As an individual, you know, I have 10 rand or $10 or 10 euro or 10 naira, whatever it may be. That's my 10, right? And I give it to you and you get 10. You know, what I think what we've seen, without mentioning too many names, over the last, you know, recent period, is that there are alternative peer-to-peer payment methods that have been implemented in various countries, but there's a cost, okay? So if I'm sending you 10 rand, actually, it's going to cost me 11 rand or 12 rand or whatever the markup that bank sort of applies to it. I recorded a podcast just the other day with Kun Jonker from Time Bank, and he was talking about the peer-to-peer within Time Bank, within the closed loop environment, and that's free. And to make those transactions free, as in a peer-to-peer, so I pay you 10, you get 10, and it costs me 10. That starts to make sense from a lower LSM, where, you know, a rand is a rand, and a rand is more than they want to spend of giving you 10. So I think to enable mass adoption of a cashless society, there does need to be the economics, but the economics need to start at sort of grassroots level. Kind of my view. I don't know whether you share that, but I think it's very difficult to digitize an economy where it's going to cost a consumer or an individual money to send money to someone when they're going, hang on a minute, why would I do that if I've got cash in my pocket?
Yeah, so I think that's fair. And I would So I think we recognize that there have been in certain countries, you do have these environments like Carl was talking about. I guess the question, provokingly maybe, to ask is whether that is always going to deliver on the problem statement, which is, do I need to, before I send you something, ask whether you're part of the same proprietary ecosystem, or, you know, because ideally we could all send to each other, right? So I think we have to believe that the end goal is for us to be interoperable and to open up some of these, you know, walled gardens, so that there really is that customer utility. So at MasterCard, we obviously we preach interoperability. I do think that with the advent of PayShap and other P2P type solutions across Africa, there is going to be a question which comes through around how do these smaller ecosystems work when things are more likely to open up. And what we need to do at that time, though, is we also need to think about the economics. And is it, to your question, that the burden should be on the person paying? And we need to look at what the benefits are to the originator as well as the receiver. And so you could argue potentially that the bank that's receiving the money then gets to sit on the float, the cash float. And so they then benefit from the cash that they're amassing by being the receiver of the transaction at scale. And so I guess what that leads you to consider is whether there are other ways of establishing the economics so that everybody's in the money at the end of the day, right? And so that's, I guess, the complexity of what we at MasterCard need to try and think through is how do we balance the buyers and the sellers, to keep it simple, or the originator and the receiver, so that everybody's in the money at the same time as solving the problem statement. And if we can actually achieve that, the likelihood is then we get scale, and those that are not part of the interoperable place will see that it's better that they open up and they participate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've got a question, and I'm going to come back to that in a minute, because I just want to talk a little bit more about innovation. And I think, again, there's perhaps a slight misconception from the general public about what MasterCard actually is. Because I think MasterCard is a lot more than just a cards company, right? And I'll kind of preface this with a bit of an example. We have a mutual customer in DTB Bank in Kenya. Actually, I saw a picture of you shaking hands with Jamie a few months ago, and that's what prompted me to reach out to you. But you know, DTB X, which is their digital banking side of Diamond Trust Bank, is just a whole different level of what a digital transformation can look like, and in my opinion, should look like for an 80-year-old bank. Right. Not one of the tier one banks, but certainly a tier two bank in Kenya. Talk to us about the involvement of MasterCard in what DTBX are doing, because it's very out there. It's very, very, very innovative. You've spoken about, you know, working with fintechs, PayU you mentioned, and some other KaiOS you mentioned. With a DTBX play, that opens up a whole different world, doesn't it?
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, look, I think that what Jamie, when you said DTBX, it's funny because last night Twitter announced that they're changing to X. So I, that's what
Twitter to X. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
A Twitter building with the X across the top of it. But what Jamie and Nassim, his CEO, are pulling off, I think, is fantastic. They've recognized that there's a lot of fintechs who are shaping up with different types of solutions for different parts of the market. And they're recognizing that not all of them have got the time and the capability and the operating model goals to establish themselves as the end-to-end bank or payments facilitator, and therefore they need a partner. And I think Jamie has done a great job positioning DTB to be that partner. And I think he's got a fantastic pipeline, from what I understand from talking to him, and he's going to have much success. And so, yeah, we're very happy with that partnership. I think that it's got a long way to run, but that's what we need right now. We need to recognize the pain points, which I was saying, that sit there, and that's what we're hearing from the fintechs. They need a friendly. And that's across Africa. And it's not just fintechs sitting in Africa. It's fintechs who want to come in from outside as well. Just this week, I've received correspondence from the UK, somebody who wants to come in and do a Pan-African play and just trying to think through who are they going to partner with in terms of banks so that they can roll out these types of solutioning. And so, banks like DTB are very relevant when we have these types of conversations.
And in terms of the solutions that MasterCard has implemented within DTBS, are you able to talk a little bit about what they are, or is that sort of confidential?
Look, I mean, I think what I can talk about is I guess relevant to your listeners as well, is that we do see obviously a real opportunity with the fintechs right now, because ultimately that's what DTB is delivering on in a variety of different areas. One of those would be on the issuing side, deploying virtual cards. As a fintech, deploying those virtual cards allow your customer to be able to do a variety of use cases, including e-commerce transactions. And those subscription type services, which are obviously highly highly sought after, and also I think leveraging the gateway that we have, gateway capabilities, so that as a merchant you can acquire e-commerce transactions. I think that's very relevant to the fintech environment as well.
Yeah.
And then I suppose the other piece, which is often crops up with fintechs as a segment, is this tap on phone type capability, where you can accept payments. Depending on your model, I mean, it's easier if we actually work through a case study of a fintech. But broadly speaking, tap on phone is a very meaningful. So those three things, I guess, are often top of mind. What we also find is that. There are other services which we can offer, which are relevant to fintechs, depending on what their strategy is. So, for example, if they want to do a significant acquisition campaign on a more customized manner, we've got a very interesting solution called Dynamic Yield. We bought a company from McDonald's, believe it or not, which means that when Darren turns up in the past, he no longer can do this with Dynamic Yield. But when he turned up at McDonald's in the past, he went on his mobile phone. So you hit that landing page on Darren's mobile phone. And what McDonald's are doing in the background, leveraging Dynamic Yield, is they're organizing that landing page so it speaks to Darren, right? And so, those are the types of services which we can now make available from a MasterCard standpoint, so that if a fintech wants to leverage a hyper-personalization, for example. So that's a very customer UX-friendly type solution. And then in the background, we do all kinds of clever things around things like fraud, you know, trying to optimize positive decisions and in getting those approval rates up. You're right. We're so much more than a cards company now. It's almost kind of funny when people even we ask the question, because I've kind of moved on from it. But you're right. I mean, we still pay a lot of the school fees from that card business that we have, but we are so much more. I mean, I think it's fair to say that we're now kind of very, very high double digits in terms of our services percentage of how we generate revenue as a company. Yeah.
So if I'm an early stage startup, fintech startup, and I'm looking, I've got proof of concept and I'm now looking to sort of get some scale, do I contact someone at MasterCard? Is there sort of an entry point for someone to go to? I'm just thinking about some of our listeners who perhaps are starting to build or at certain stages of their fintech and now go, right, okay, we need to kind of solidify this and need to get a relationship with MasterCard. How does one go about that? Have you got any programs to sort of enable people to do that sort of thing?
Yeah, so I sometimes feel like I'm the fintech help desk because of the number of queries I get on LinkedIn every week saying, hey Mark, you know, and I'm very happy to always direct them to our fintech team. So we have a segment which is fintech alongside other segments, and we take that segment incredibly seriously. And we recognize their needs, which are fast onboarding, and you know they need to have capacity built into their ecosystem. Having said that, we also have some programs which are in place. So we have an accelerator program which actually speeds up onboarding. So that's something I would urge your listeners to find out more about. We also have a Start Path program. So Start Path program typically is Series B, Series C. What that allows is it's kind of quite a rigorous process to get onto that Start Path program. But the cool thing about it is if you make your way onto the program, then you have the ability to market yourself globally to the network we have. And that obviously helps fill up your order book. What I mean by that is that, you know, you may be sitting in Tanzania, you've got an awesome solution, but ultimately, you know, you want to deploy this KYC globally. And so the opportunity to market yourself to a bank in Singapore, say, comes through leveraging that Start Path program. So I've seen a bunch of cool African names like I'm going to try and remember them. Hello Tractor, Ukesh, Cellcom. There's a number of different fintechs which have gone through that program and are leveraging it. I would say just generally, so then once you're working with our team, then what we then do is we kind of just help let you navigate. So if there's, for example, there's a need to work with Jamie Loden, since you mentioned Jamie and DTB, then that kind of warm introduction will make sense. And we have the ability to do that across Africa. So I think there's a variety of different programs, and then there's the human touch as well, which we can pull through just to kind of hold hands here.
I mean, I know one of the companies just mentioned, you know, pretty well, Cash, and I think the platform you've provided them, obviously there's history between the relationship between Cash and MasterCard, but I think the platform that you've enabled them to have access to has accelerated their business. I mean, it's grown exponentially over the last couple of years. Clayton and the team have done exceptionally well, so I think that's testament to the program.
Yeah, the relationship with Ukesh has really worked wonders. I think what you know is great about them is that they recognized I think the opportunity with QR and the opportunity. You know, I was always impressed by those simple use cases where there's somebody sat very close to you who you want to meet, who you've never met before, who may have secured something like car parking for you in an area, right? Yep. And you just want to make a simple payment from you to that individual. And, you know, they've always had a really innovative way of thinking, and they put in place a process. I might get some of the details incorrect, but basically allowing you to scan a QR code with that person, which then allows them to go withdraw the money from an ATM such as Pick and Pay. And I love that. I mean, I love the fact that they've taken that problem statement where you're in your pockets, you can't find the cash, but you need to make that payment because they fulfilled a role for you, right? And you want to compensate accordingly. And so I love the fact that Clayton and team solve problems like that. And I think when you're doing that, and you know, that those specific use cases, and then you can scale that up and do things and I think that's really impressive. I do believe that Ucash is a great example as well of a fintech which is thinking beyond South Africa. And similarly to Jamie over at DTB, how can they work together ultimately and kind of each play a role in the payments experience? So it's not that Jamie and Ucash necessarily compete with each other. Far from it. They're actually partners, right? It's just that and I think as we go through this next phase of the economic climate and some of the valuations have got a little bit spicy, there's a bit of froth, and it might not make so much sense to raise more and more money to build more and more capability. It might make sense to focus on your knitting, and rather create partnerships which are win-win so that you can actually build and scale your revenue accordingly.
Well, listen, there's no shortage of payments companies in Africa. Let's be clear about that, right? So maybe there'll be some consolidation at some point this year or next. We're already starting to see it here in South Africa with Network International acquiring, Payfast and DPO. And I think Peach Payments have just, raised a significant amount of money as well. I know that's yet to be sort of signed and sealed, but it's there or thereabouts. So I think there's some interesting times ahead, certainly in SA, and I believe Kenya as well. Lots of players, bit of a race at the bottom in terms of margins, but I'll let them fight that out.
Yes, there could be some consolidation. That's fine. But I also believe that there's a lot of white spaces in Africa. I think there's enough for us all to go after. The SME remains a very underserved segment. I think we haven't even started to talk about B2B. So there's so many white spaces in Africa. I actually think there could be a lot more fintech solving a lot more problems. Fine, maybe consolidation, but we need more fintechs.
That's what keeps us in business, right? So yes, get more fintechs, please. Absolutely, keep knocking them out. I wanted to come back just to one point, and I've spoken a lot about this on the podcast series. Actually, I had Hannes from Binance on just a couple of days ago, which we're yet to broadcast, but that's coming out in the next couple of weeks. We're talking about crypto. And we're talking about sort of crypto acceptance. Again, we're not talking here about specific coins, or we're not giving any financial advice whatsoever. But the utilization, the utility behind crypto, and I know MasterCard has certainly an interest and has a solution or a technology that is looking at, how crypto, how blockchain can be utilized within the payments ecosystem. Are you able to elaborate on that? Where MasterCard sees crypto within the ecosystem?
Sure. So I'll give you kind of the quick answer on the use cases. I think the blockchain, very useful, very focused on cross-border central bank digital currencies, I think also crypto. And and then some on provenance. So in terms of just working through those quickly, on provenance, we've done some very interesting work in Zimbabwe, where we've actually shown proof of provenance with cattle, believe it or not, and the authenticity of the origin of those cattle to help with the price stability into export markets. So I think it's a really interesting use case. On cross-border, I think it's fair to say there's a lot of cost in the correspondent banking system, $150 plus per transaction. So you have to believe that there's a disruptive element which the blockchain can provide in that space. In terms of central bank digital currencies, we were actually the first in the Bahamas with the Sandcoin helping. And we've got a bunch of projects across the continent where we're working with central banks, thinking through how to help them build digital currencies. Ultimately, if you think about what MasterCard does, we've actually, we write the rules and we update the rules in order to the payments ecosystem to operate with the integrity with which it operates. And so you have to believe that in a new payments ecosystem, we could help write the rules, we can help with a bunch of stuff, right? So I think we have utility in these areas, which we shouldn't lose sight of. And then, of course, crypto itself. And, we work with crypto exchanges around the world, and we've got really great proof points of where we have delivered cards which are effectively crypto-backed in one way or another. And there are lots of launches in that space. And I think there's also potentially combinations of that where you could have a card backing a digital currency as well, such as a central bank digital currency. So there's potentially some hybrid in what I just said. Against that backdrop, then, MasterCard has recognized what are the risks that sit within the ecosystem. And so one of the things I get a lot is, a regulator's gone on pause and said, we need to think about crypto. We don't want crypto happening until we figured out the regulation. So that's where, again, back to the capacity building, I want the team to spend time helping the regulator think through some of those issues. So that's one thing we do. But also the way we can help is we've figured out that we need to invest. And so we bought a company called CipherTrace. And what CipherTrace does is it enables the bank, let's say, or the government, to understand what the origin is of the crypto and to understand the routing of the crypto through the ecosystem so that you have some understanding about where those crypto transactions are happening and what you might want to do about it. And that's something which we're going to continue to build upon, because ultimately, if you as a player in payments don't understand, the origin of transactions and indeed where these transactions are flowing and whether they are risky and how risky they are, it's very difficult to allow them to come into your ecosystem. And you can see, the pressures that sometimes creates. I've read headlines recently in the Far East about banks which are being told to handle crypto transactions because the regulator is telling them to. When you look at that and you think, well, how can we help the banks ultimately? How can we help the banks? And so that's why we're investing heavily in these types of solutions like CipherTrace.
Yeah, it's a complex area. It really is. And I think we were talking about acceptance and consumer acceptance. Again, when I was back in the UK a few months ago, I was driving down the M4, I think it was, and I just saw this bridge, the bridge that goes over the road. And I double took. If I wasn't driving within the speed limit, I would have taken my phone out and taken a picture of it. But it was literally graffiti that said, say no to CBDCs. It was like, well, even the graffiti artists are out now against CBDC. So I think there's going to be a hearts and minds sort of battle there. But You should see.
That's a strong message to put on a bridge on the M4. I want to put that up.
Yeah, isn't it, Just? Yeah, so I thought as well. Maybe I misread it. Maybe it was something a bit crude, but I'm sure that's what it said. Anyway, Mark, I'd like to post a couple of links, certainly to some of the programs you mentioned. And anyone that's looking on YouTube, they're going to be down here. Anyone that's on listening on Spotify or Apple, we'll put the links in the description. So feel free to have a look around. I know that the MasterCard website is full of really useful resources, whether you're a fintech, whether you're a consumer, whether you're a merchant, wherever you sort of are within the ecosystem of payments. As we've said, MasterCard's broader than that, but let's start with that. There's a heap of information. Mark, if people want to get in touch with MasterCard here in sub-Saharan Africa, what's the best port of call? Is it via the website? Is it via you? Is it via your team? Is there a central point? I appreciate you don't want to get bombarded.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut across you. So I think there's a variety of different ways. You mentioned some of the programs which we have in place on the website, and those are available on MasterCard.com or MasterCard.co.za. I think, though, you know, there are other spaces. There's the developer zone on the website, and the developer zone, it's actually incredible. You should check it out. Because it actually explains all of the APIs that we've got available in the type of English you and I actually both understand. And you can get to a relative level of detailed understanding about what APIs we've got available very quickly. And that's freely available. And then I think, you know, reach out, right? We're incredibly collaborative. That is the whenever we have an opportunity to talk to any group about who we are and what we stand for, it's one of partnership and collaboration. And that's often we collaborate with people who you didn't think we would ever collaborate with. We tend to always find there's always a way, one way or another, to work together. So reach out and we'll figure it out.
Amazing. Mark, listen, thanks so much. It's I can see the difference now of you sort of, you know, recording one versus recording two. You were clearly feeling under the weather recording one. So it's good to have you in full spirit. Thank you to you, and thank you for your team as well at MasterCard for facilitating this. A big thanks. This will be going live in the next couple of weeks, and I look forward to meeting you finally in person at some point at some part of the continent in some hotel probably.
Great, and I'll wear a shirt for you, I promise. Thank you.
Oh, no, listen, as soon as this is finished, the t-shirt's going on. Mark, thanks so much. Have a great day.
And that's a wrap for this week's episode of Talking Success. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for this fascinating discussion on all things fintech. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and have gained some valuable insights into the ever-evolving world of finance and technology. A huge thank you to our guests for sharing their expertise and providing us with some amazing insights. We certainly couldn't have done this without them. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting conversations with experts in the field. Until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep talking success.